Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patzer. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Plaque. His happy birthday anniversary of 15 years of Behind the Plaque. Your donations and subscriptions, most welcome, most helpful, because there are stranger things in the universe than we imagine, such as interstellar objects. This is the second time I've had to deal with this challenging origin of where something comes from the outside and races through our solar system. They apprehended one a couple of years ago, and there was speculation it was a spaceship or human-made or something made. This new one, I haven't heard that, but here's Bob to tell us. Bob, what is an interstellar object, and is this a spaceship? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. This is actually the third that's been discovered, John. We tend to forget Comet Borisov was also an interstellar object a few years ago. That was the second interstellar object picked up. The first was Oumuamua, and we don't know what it was, but it did have elements that suggested it might not have been a natural object, but we unfortunately couldn't get Goldsmith to know. It was long and very thin. It had a color that didn't make sense. Its speed actually accelerated a bit as it was leaving the solar system, which doesn't make sense. Suggestion, there are explanations that could explain that are natural, but nonetheless, it was a mystery. This third object was just discovered by the Atlas Survey Telescope, which is designed to look for asteroids. And then they went back to archival data and found additional earlier images, which allows the astronomers to plot its path. And the path is very clearly interstellar. It is not in orbit around the sun. It's coming from outside the solar system at a very fast speed. That's another indicator that it's not from the solar system. And it's going to zip through inside the orbit of Mars, get actually really not that far from Mars, and then zip out, and it'll be out of the solar system. What do you call it, by the end of this year. Its closest point to Earth will be about 200 million miles, and that's going to be in October. That's its closest to the sun, 200 million miles, and that'll be in October. It's interstellar. No one can tell you anything about it right now. Based on the amount of light it exudes, they have theories about how big it is, but none of that should be taken any seriously. There is possibilities it'll act like a comet as it comes through, but we don't know that yet. It's just right now inside the orbit of Jupiter and moving very fast, which is why by October it'll zip past the sun.
Bob, we got to get a piece of that story. Is anybody chasing it? We talked about being ready, and we're not.
No. There's no way on this short notice you could send a probe to catch this thing. When Oumuamua came by, there was actually a scientific a paper that suggested a method for possibly catching up with it, but that had to happen very fast, and it's not. What needs to happen eventually, and I think once we have a really robust capitalist industry in space, is to have a spacecraft ready to go when we discover one of these things. But even then, the difficulty of catching up to this is not easy. It's moving super fast, like 150,000 miles per hour as it crosses the sun. This is not slow moving. And so to get any spacecraft up to that speed in any reasonable amount of time is just not easy.
So we got to get lucky, and it has to hit something so we get a piece of it. All right, interstellar object.
That might not be so lucky, John, you know, depending on what it hits.
I know. The scenario of it striking the moon or something that throws off the treatise. Let's go to something a little more normal, which is your sunspot up. Oh, nope, not sunspot. The Chinese have contributed.
Yeah, this is part of their planetary program. They launched a Tianwen-2 asteroid probe. It's going to bring back samples from an asteroid in about 2 years. It's only been launched. It's very few images of this have been released. But the one image that has been released suggests that they stole the Lucy design to build it. And they also stole the OSIRIS-REx design to build it. But they haven't shown pictures, which tells me they did steal designs, and they're a little ashamed of that. But it's working properly. It took pictures of both the moon and the Earth as it moves away from our moves away. And those images, there's nothing scientifically significant about those images. They just basically tell us that its pointing capability is accurate, its cameras are working, and therefore it will be able to do its job when it gets at least get close to the asteroid it wants to go to.
The sunspots, Bob. My memory slips me as to what you saw the last time. It was something about a double peak and nothing.
Last month, NOAA updates its graph showing the activity of sunspots on the sun to track the 11-year solar cycle, the sunspot cycle, where it goes from very active to very weak. And in the past solar maximum, it was double peaked. It was also much weaker than predicted. In other words, it had a peak, and then it started to decline, and then it had another peak. This solar maximum has been more active than predicted. They haven't gotten really any prediction right in the last two solar maximums. The solar scientists don't really understand what's going on. But it started. What happened last month was unusual. Last month's update, it's been declining, and the solar scientists are now saying it's heading towards the minimum. And I say they really don't know. We could have a double peak again. There's no reason not. Last month, the amount of sunspots dropped ridiculously. This is in May, much more than ever expected. It was the first time the amount of sunspots was actually below their prediction in this entire cycle since 2020. And the drop was so precipitous, it really looked like an outlier, like maybe there's a data error. Well, this month, this most recent update for June's activity shows that the low number in May was not wrong, but the June activity shows a recovery somewhat. In fact, it's the first time it hit the prediction exactly, which is really amazing. In fact, in the 15 years I've been tracking this, it was the first time the sunspots actually did hit a prediction right on the number, unbelievably. Are we heading towards minimum right now? They say yes. I say they haven't the faintest idea. We could end up with another maximum, another double peaked maximum, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Attached to this is the ozone hole. I remember this from the 20th century. Didn't that solve itself?
No, it didn't solve itself. But in 1978, the first satellite was launched, Nimbus, that could track details on the sun and also measure ozone layer around the Earth. And it discovered something that people were scared of at that time, a hole that appeared every year over the over Antarctica. The ozone hole kind of disappeared over Antarctica. And they've been tracking that. And in the 80s, they said, oh, my God, this is because of chlorofluorocarbon, CFCs, that are used in aerosol cans. Those things enter the atmosphere. They rise up to the ozone layer, and they react with it, and they'll destroy the ozone layer. So in 87, they passed something called the Montreal Protocol, which banned CFCs over the next few years. This was going to save the ozone layer and eliminate the ozone hole. And I said at the time that, wait a minute, we only just started tracking the ozone layer in 78. That hole could have always been there. We don't know if that's a new phenomenon. Well, a scientist has now tracked the ozone behavior now for more than almost a half century. We now have a long track record. And what this scientist found unequivocally is that the ozone layer and its increase and decrease tracks precisely with the solar cycle. And the solar cycle is the result. When there's little activity on the sun, that reduces the ability of the sun's solar wind to keep cosmic rays out of the solar system. And so during minimum times, there's an increase in cosmic rays. And the theory of the scientists is that those cosmic rays interact with the ozone layer and cause a decline. And that is what this data says. It says that CFCs almost certainly have a very minor, at most, impact on the ozone layer. That almost all the data we've got says it comes from cosmic rays and the solar cycle, which means the ban was probably not necessary. And a lot of people questioned it at the time. For example, one fact, Ozone hole is occurring over Antarctica. Almost all CFC use is in the northern hemisphere. And the two hemispheres atmospherically are very distinct. It's very difficult for the CFCs to get down to the southern hemisphere. Yet there was no ozone hole over the Arctic. So once again, this is an example of uncertainty of science, John, and what you should not jump too quickly to conclusions.
Bob, my memory is they banned a whole cycle of manufacturing, the spray cans. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. The CFCs, they didn't ban spray cans so much, but they banned, CFCs were used in spray cans and in air conditioning, in cars air conditioning, your home air conditioning. The entire air conditioning industry had to be reshaped to deal with this ban. And the air conditioning nowadays is far less efficient and less effective because of that ban. And once again, it might not have been necessary.
Cosmic rays and ozone hole. Now, methane. Why are we testing methane in the climate and what failed?
Oh, well, this is an interesting story. This was a satellite called MethaneSat that was paid for mostly by Jeff Bezos. And it was operated and built almost entirely by an environmental activist organization called the Environmental Defense Fund. And it was sent up to try to track methane in the atmosphere. And it was supposed to have a 5-year mission. I've had a lot of engineers tell me that this mission was junk, that they really could never find out anything. Methane is thought to be a global warming material, and they want to track how industry is bringing it into the atmosphere when most of it comes from cows. Anyway, the MethaneSat satellite worked for about a year, and now suddenly it has failed. They've lost contact with it, and they pretty much have written it off as dead. They say the data they gathered will be of some use. I have doubts, but we'll have to wait and see on that.
And now a phenomenon, an exploding supernova, twice exploding. Is this unknown?
There was a theory that there are several types of supernovas. And the type 1A supernova is a type that is created when you have a binary system of stars, one of which, the central star, is a heavy mass white dwarf. And the star that orbits it is really a gas giant, and the white dwarf sucks material off of the gas giant star. And as that material piles up on the surface of the white dwarf, it eventually reaches critical mass and explodes and produces a supernova. There had been a theory that the actual explosion would then cause a secondary explosion within the core of the white dwarf. And that would create what they call a double detonation. Well, astronomers using the Very Large Telescope down in Chile have discovered a supernova remnant that's only a couple of hundred years old, at least they say that has two shells surrounding it, which suggests a double detonation. And those two shells, each shell has material calcium in both. And they say this is evidence of a double detonation supernova. Once again, a lot of this is theory, a lot of it is uncertain, but at least they have now some data that supports the theory.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. It's happy birthday, the 15th anniversary of Behind the Black. Bob focuses on commercial space a great deal, but lots of science as well. We're going to turn to the politics of space right now, big space, when we come back. Space engineering as only the Senate can practice it.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.